It's Tuesday, October 7th, and you're listening to the Geek News Central podcast, sponsored by GoDaddy.com. Geek News Central is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Hey, everybody, I'm Mike James, your guest host for this Tuesday. Those of you who have been around for a while are going, you're not Todd, and you're right, I'm not Todd. But you know, we've got some of the best news in tech, science, culture, the internet. It's all coming up. Hang on tight. Geek News Central's coming right at you.
This is the Geek News Central Podcast, part of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. So grab a cup of coffee, take a seat, and crank up that volume. Because you're listening to Todd on the Geek News Central Podcast.
Good day and welcome to the Geek News Central Podcast. I am your guest host, Mike James. Today, the Geek News Central Podcast is coming to you as live as it can be from beautiful, sunny Florida. And of course, don't forget to check out geeknewscentral.com for all kinds of stories and updates. And of course, the podcast link for links to all the things we're going to talk about on tonight's show. Now, a big welcome to all the returning family from the Geek News Central podcast. As Todd says, the Ohana, welcome to the show. If you're new to the show, really appreciate you checking it out. You know, that's one of the great things about the Geek News Central podcast is the sense of family and that you get from everyone here that's been listening to this show for a while. Now, as we're recording this, odds are Todd and his family are standing in line for something like, you know, Thunder Mountain or, you know, I don't know what else they could, you know, the teacups, who knows? So I hope they're having a great time. Todd is taking a much deserved rest. You know, this is the first time in many years that he's actually taken, you know, a full week off and gone off and just enjoyed himself. So let's wish him well. And you're going to have another guest host come for Friday's show, and I'm sure he's going to do a great job. Todd will be back with you in the saddle on Tuesday. So a little bit about me before we get things started. Again, my name is Mike James. Now, I've been podcasting for several years now. I do a new show somewhat similar to this one, usually a little shorter. And I also do a movie review show with my wife. And I find that, you know, podcasting is not only a great way to learn about things and learn about yourself, but it's a whole lot of fun. And if you want to hear about, you know, what I'm talking about when I say it's just a lot of fun doing podcasts, one quick plug for my one of my shows is letswatchmovies.com. I do that with my wife, and I started doing it with my wife specifically because I wanted to involve her in podcasting. Podcasting has started to become something I have really enjoyed doing it, and I'm really happy that that we do it together. It really does bring us together as a husband and wife, and boy, I could tell you, it's a whole lot of fun, and some weeks it seems like you can almost hear, you know, the marital infighting, you know, the differences of opinion that you can have. And that's part of the fun. The audience actually gets to hear us discuss movies and how our opinions kind of differ. Now, I've been listening to Geek News Central for well before we reached three digits. So that's quite a while. And I was very honored when Todd asked me to go ahead and sit in for a show. Now, we've got some outstanding news stories for you today. But first, let's take care of a little business here. And first, I do want to mention GoDaddy.com. You know, GoDaddy has been a sponsor of the Geek News Central podcast for a very long time. And, you know, domain prices have gone up, and it's not because of GoDaddy. It is because, you know, the powers that be have actually at ICANN or wherever it is have actually raised the price of a domain name. So right now, to register a domain name costs $7.49 over at GoDaddy.com. But, you know, if you're looking for a domain name or hosting, GoDaddy.com, they have what you need. And don't forget to use the Geek News Central promo code. Save yourself a little money over at GoDaddy.com. Of course, you can use Todd for 10% off your order. Geek5 for 15% off any order of $20 or more. And, of course, if you need some shared hosting, the code you want to use there is Todd20 to save 20% off your year's shared hosting account. And again, a big thank you to GoDaddy for being a continued sponsor here at the Geek News Central podcast. Now, we also do want to mention GoToMeeting. You know, if you've ever been to an online meeting, you know how long it can take to set up the technology and get the meeting started. That's why you need the easiest online meeting service available, GoToMeeting. With GoToMeeting, you and your attendees can join meetings in seconds without technical headaches. You can deliver instant sales demonstrations and customer training sessions right from your own computer, share presentations or programs with anyone, anywhere, and avoid the high cost of travel. You and your attendees can also use GoToMeeting as an integrated phone and voice over IP conferencing service to make sure everyone in your meetings is on the same page. GoToMeeting is so easy to use that you'll have your first meeting up and running in seconds. Try GoToMeeting free for 30 days with unlimited online meetings. Just visit GoToMeeting.com/tech podcast. That's GoToMeeting.com/tech podcast. GoToMeeting. Online meetings made easy. And you know, I have used GoToMeeting, and I'll tell you, it is an awesome program. All right, so what do we have set up for news? Oh, you know what? I have not given you the email address. Of course, if you have any feedback, questions, comments, you can send those to geeknews@gmail.com, or you can call the voicemail hotline at 619-342-7365. Well, let's see what we got here. First story comes off of BlackFriday.gotadeal.com. Now, this is kind of like, New Year's, same story kind of thing. Every year we run into this story where retailers want to keep their prices a secret. You know, they want to be this big secret thing so that you're all out there rushing to get the Thursday paper before Black Friday. You know, the Friday where everybody goes out and stands in line for 6 hours to get something for $100 less than they could have bought it. And I guess, you know, depending on your situation, that may be important to you. I do go out on Black Friday myself. I usually go to Sears, though, because there's usually not a line. You get some great deals. I got a leather jacket for $50 a couple of years ago. So real issue here, though, is this story is about Walmart threatening again to sue websites that publish their prices early. I guess they still haven't learned that you can't copyright or protect a price. You know, a price is just a price. And threatening to sue someone if they say that you're going to have something on sale, it's just silly. Why do we go through this every year? You know, I mean, I understand they're trying to pressure, and I have a problem with that. I have a problem with trying to scare people into taking information down. And the real problem here, of course, is let's say that they succeeded and everybody took the Walmart prices down, but the Kmart and the Target and the Sears circulars and the Best Buy and all that still were up on the website. You'd kind of forget about Walmart. Would you really hold out and say, oh no, I gotta wait for that paper and I gotta go? No, you wouldn't. You could care less. And I guess Walmart just thinks they got a big enough stick, and they are the big retailer there, I guess, that they can kind of try to bully people around. Personally, I just don't get it. Also got a real interesting story here over on livescience.com. Now, have you heard about the Messenger spacecraft? Now, that's a spacecraft that flew by Mercury and sent us back some pictures of Mercury a while back. Well, it's doing another flyby. And the interesting thing is, first of all, it's giving us a much better view of the surface of Mercury. As close as Mercury is to us, it's the planet we've seen the least of as far as the actual surface. And they've got a neat picture here up on the website. And they've also got some information about how they used not only the gravity assist of, you know, swinging around between the sun and Mercury, but also the solar winds that affect the trajectory of the spacecraft. And the scientists are using these solar winds as a way of saving propellant, you know, because that's once you're out there in space, there's no gas stations. So it's really amazing. And they say they're going to get about 30% of the planet's surface image this time. You know, it's not like we expect to find life, but it's still, I think it's important that we actually get to see Mercury because it's not that far away. You know, we know so much about Saturn and Jupiter and Uranus and Neptune, and even we're starting to try to image Pluto better. And Mercury, still much of the planet has never been photographed. There is also a very compelling story over on sciencenews.org about what scientists have done. They have simulated colliding two black holes. Now, we're not talking about the Hadron Collider here that's going to destroy the planet. No, they've taken two black holes and simulated, these are simulated, of course, and collided them at near the speed of light, like what would happen out in space if two black holes actually went right at each other. part of the reason they did this is they wanted to see if by colliding these two black holes at such a massive pace would avoid the event horizon. One of the problems with black holes, there's an event horizon, which is a point at which when you get close enough, not even light can escape, which is why we call them black holes. But the problem is you can't see what's going on inside. It's a mystery. No one knows what's happening beyond the event horizon. And they were thinking, well, maybe if two black holes collided with each other, the resulting energy would allow you to see past the event horizon. That didn't happen. However, the simulation did show something interesting in that the amount of matter converted into gravitational waves was much larger than they thought. They were figuring a percentage point or two, and it was somewhere around 14% of the mass of the black hole was actually converted into gravitational energy. That's astounding. So black holes still remain a mystery. You can't see what's going on inside of it. And of course, the idea is to see the singularity, you know, the point at which matter collapses in upon space to the point where normal physics just don't exist anymore. But it looks like that's a mystery we're just going to have to deal with probably for the rest of my life. Now, how many of you out there have Dish Network? I do. I have Dish Network. And I'm worried about maybe my bill's going to go up. The Supreme Court has let stand a lower court ruling that said that Dish Network did indeed infringe against a patent or two held by TiVo in the way that it recorded multiple shows and let you watch one show and record another show. Now, the really weird part about this is Dish Network did a software update and the receiver can still record one show while you watch a different show, but because the software does it in a different way, they're no longer infringing. So it doesn't really impact the customer as far as, you know, my stuff still works. I can still record Sarah Connor Chronicles while I'm watching, Big Bang Theory or whatever the case may be. Man, and if you haven't watched Big Bang Theory, I don't normally watch sitcoms, but that one's a lot of fun, especially if you're a geek. Real problem here is that Supreme Court is going to let hold that $74 million judgment against Dish. Now, that is a big chunk of change. I don't pretend to understand all the intricacies of the software patent and exactly where the infringement occurred. I just understand the fact that I hate the idea of that $74 million coming out of my pocket, because guess what? That's exactly where it's going to come out of. Remember, anytime you have a large corporation and they get fined or sued or anything, the corporation may be paying, but they're getting their money right from you. All right, now off of ScienceDaily.com, this is kind of a scary story. Are you one of those people that uses the little squirty hand disinfectant stuff? Do you walk around with a Clorox wipe in your back pocket in one of those little tear-open pouches? You know, It's scary. You know, I have a kid and, we do have her wash her hands and stuff. And I guess, you know, my wife, when we go and like, let's say we go to a petting zoo or something and she's petting the animals, she always, you know, wants to squirt the hands with the stuff and, you know, oh, you got to wash your hands and then squirt it with the disinfectant because you touched a giraffe's tongue or something, you know, like somehow a giraffe's tongue has been somewhere the rest of the world hasn't. And maybe it has, but there's a real scary story here that disinfectants may be causing bacteria to be more resistant to treatment. And they're not just talking about you and mom and everybody who is, and sometimes, you know, it really is insane how obsessive some people get over using these disinfectants. There are a couple of people I work with that it seems like their hands are constantly being squirted. They go through one or two bottles of that stuff a month. And I'm talking about the big bottles. So using these disinfectants, though, what happens is, sure, in full strength, they kill all the bacteria, they kill all the bugs, all the nasty stuff. The problem is that there's a residue, or let's say a part that doesn't get completely covered, and so some of the bacteria and stuff die, but some don't, and they become much more effective at resisting the disinfectants. And we're also talking about, you know, hospital-class disinfectants, not just, you know, the little hand wipes I was making fun of. You know, this is one of the issues, you know, very common bacteria like Staphylococcus are becoming much better at getting rid of the proteins that are toxic to them that we make the disinfectants from. This accounts for why we're having trouble in some hospitals with infections that you can really get sick from catching an infection in the hospital. You know, I will tell you right now that the worst place to get an infection is at the hospital. If you're out in your backyard and you cut yourself and you get infected, it is probably a run-of-the-mill, you know, garden variety bacteria. You could probably wash that thing with soap, get a regular cheesy antibiotic from your, and I say cheesy, you know, lighthearted, you know, just a regular antibiotic if you need one, and you'll probably be fine. You go into the hospital and you're good, but then a week later, you get an infection. A lot of times that infection turns out to be something really nasty because the only things that live in hospitals, because they clean them so emphatically, are the really nasty resistant things. And turns out our efforts to be clean may be what's causing so many of these bacteria to become more resistant. Now, I'm not saying not to clean stuff. I'm just saying it's kind of scary. Now, this next story, you had me beat my head against the wall when I read this one. It's off of tech.yahoo.com, but it's all over the place. You've heard about real networks. Now, I don't know what your opinion on real networks is. I have never been a real fan of real. I actually accidentally, and I'm going to use the term, infected my computer with the real player at one point a couple years ago. And I had to do almost a complete reinstall of Windows to get it off my computer. I mean, I know how to pound my way around a registry. And thank goodness, because I accidentally got that thing installed and it just messed things up and I could not get its claws out of my system. Fortunately, things aren't that bad anymore. I actually use the Rhapsody system. My wife uses it for, I guess you call it, it's like a music subscription service. You know, she just pays $15 a month and all the music she can listen to. And that's associated with Real, but it doesn't install any junk on your computer you don't want. Well, Real came out with a new product called Real DVD, and the idea here was you'd buy this product for like $50 or $60, and it would allow you to copy your DVDs onto a hard drive, and you could even transport that to another computer that you owned. You had to pay them like $20 or $30 to register that computer, but it locked everything down. It was like taking your DVD and putting it on a hard drive, but keeping it locked down because it didn't remove the DVD encryption. And it also put its own encryption on top of things. I mean, this is as locked down as you're going to get. But of course, that's not good enough for the Motion Picture Association of America. Now, Real DVD actually filed a offensive lawsuit against the MPAA saying, you know, hey, it's legal before anything actually happened. The MPAA filed a countersuit and they have actually gotten a judge to agree to temporarily suspend the sale of Real DVD. Now, this is just abhorrent to me that a judge is going to go ahead and say, okay, I'm going to go ahead and not allow you to sell your product while we figure out if it's legal. This, you know, I am in America, right? You know, innocent until proven guilty and all that stuff. And it's not like Real is some fly-by-night company that's going to disappear and has no money to pay damages. And it's not like anybody who wants to record their DVDs and burn them can't do it now. I will tell you right now, if I wanted to burn a DVD to my hard drive, I could do it pretty darn easily, and it wouldn't have any restrictions. This Real DVD is just all kinds of copyrighted up the hilt. You'd think the MPAA would be happy, but no. They're clinging to every last vestige they can of total control over a format that's pretty much dying anyway. You know, the physical formats are going away. Even Blu-ray is struggling because people, you know, Blu-ray sales are actually down because you don't need a physical format anymore. Pay-per-view and downloading it straight off onto your hard drive is becoming much more common. But, you know, I'll link up to the story, of course, over at geeknewscentral.com. If you have any comments on this story or any other stories, don't forget, it's geeknews@gmail.com. Or you can call the voicemail hotline at 619-342-7365. Now, I'm also going to link up to a story I found on Ars Technica. I'm just going to touch on this one. I don't want to get too heavy into it, but how many of you use Ubuntu or Fedora, a Linux distribution? I actually use Ubuntu on I use Sun's VirtualBox, which is, I believe, Sun Microsystems. It's a VirtualBox, which is like a virtual machine inside Windows, and it's free. And I run Ubuntu just to see if I could do it. I actually posted something on Twitter saying, hey, I'm posting this from Ubuntu, because I'd always wanted to use a Linux distribution, but I'd never actually broken down and installed it on a computer before. Well, this story talks about the latest versions of both Fedora and Ubuntu. They come out with a new version about every 6 months, pretty much in synchronicity with each other. Is that a song or is that a word? Yeah, go check it out if you're all into Linux and Linux distributions. I still think we're a little bit away from them taking over the Windows space or the Apple operating system space. Still takes a little bit too much geek to get them working, but it's still neat, and they are getting much, much better. All right, so let's move on over to news.bbc.co.uk. Found this story. It's about a new group that's being formed by music artists. You know, very often you hear a lot of stories, not only on Geek News Central, but other shows, about what's going on with the RIAA, you know, and that the artists are claiming they're not getting their money, but the RIAA is claiming they're standing up for artists. Well, some artists have got together and formed the Featured Artists Coalition. Now, a lot of big names have already signed up, including the Kaiser Chiefs, The Verve, Radiohead, I believe Nine Inch Nails, and others have signed up to be a part of this coalition. And what they're there for is at first, I thought they were going to be an alternative to the RIAA, but it looks like they're to be some kind of a figurehead, a way of helping the artists deal with the RIAA and other large record industry companies. You know, it's getting to the point now, and we've got another story later on in the show, that artists don't really need the recording industry, the Recording Industry Association of America, or any other large corporation. Once you're known, it's pretty easy to get your stuff out there, and even if you're not, I mean, have you heard of Jonathan Coulton, right? Big online hit. The problem is that you still need the RIAA if you fall somewhere in the middle. Jonathan Coulton has some really great music, and he became popular, but there's 20 artists just like him that I listen to that you've never heard of. I bet some of you have heard of Matthew Ebel. He's got some great music, but I bet almost none of you have ever listened to Kevin Reeves, and he's an independent artist I think is probably the best independent artist I've heard in a long time, and yet I hardly ever meet anyone who's ever heard of him. So hopefully maybe this movement, as well as others, will help artists get a little more say in what's going on, and help you if you want to be an independent artist. Maybe you can also deal with the RIAA, but have more of a hands-on, more control, not feel like the RIAA is holding all the cards. You know, I think that's one of the problems that a lot of us, a lot of people, I want to include you in my fancy here, a lot of people have with things like the RIAA, is they purport to support artists, and I'm sure they do a lot to support artists, but you see a lot that just doesn't seem to be completely in the artist's best interest, and you hear horror stories, so I think a little more of a balance is a good thing. Also want to touch on a story here I found over on news.wired.com about a diary of Ilan Ramon. Now, you may not remember who that is. It's Israel's first ever astronaut, and he was one of the unfortunate victims when the Columbia disintegrated upon reentry back in February of 2003. Somehow, parts of his diary actually survived reentry, survived the disintegration of the aircraft, and then survived for months outside until someone found it. Now, much of the diary is more or less unreadable, but they were able to decipher about 80% of the text, and they're going to display a couple pages with some non-personal information at the request of his wife. But I just wanted to touch on it because it's absolutely, it's sad yet fascinating that in the midst of so much chaos and destruction, something so personal survived. Now over on LiveScience.com, I did find an interesting story about the oldest footprints ever found. Now, these aren't people footprints. These are just the oldest footprints, period. 570 million years old. Now, these things are only a couple millimeters across. And the age is being debated, as all good science should, but it looks like these are probably the oldest known footprints on the planet Earth. And one of the things here is it pushes back the date when we think that, you know, life first ventured out on the land back by about 30 million years, if the dates are right. So back 570 million years ago, some little something or other had actually invented, quote-unquote, walking. So real interesting. I always find it amazing when we find out, you know, things like this, and you're going back so long ago. Imagine how much you can find out from just these little itty-bitty indentations in some former soft sediment that, of course, is fossilized. You know, half the time I have to find my cell phone to call it, and yet scientists managed to find footprints from 570 million years ago. Apparently, they know a scientific method that I don't. Of course, I know my method. I call my cell phone. So, once it's not on vibrate, it works pretty well. Oh, man, now this next story. You have got to pay attention to this next story. If you or your business uses encryption on your backup drives, and of course, you darn well better be using encryption on your backup drives, but there is a new exploit that's been found that will allow people to, if you have more than one saved backup, compare the two backups and retrieve some information. Now, the attack uses the idea that you're using the same encryption key for both backups. And one of the things that prevents any kind of decrypting of these encrypted files, I mean, you could brute force it, but it just takes, you know, for so many computer cycles, it's not worth it in most cases. Is the entropy in things like text files and things is that they change so much. You know, letters change so much, and drives and directories and everything, the information stored changes so much that it's hard to compare to and come out with any kind of sensible thing once it's been encrypted. However, pictures are a different matter. And they found out that if you have a bitmap and it's on both encrypted versions, they can locate that. And that's because a lot of times pictures tend to have big, broad areas with no real change in the color, you know, like a big sky or a big white wall or something like that. And that by comparing these two, they can extract enough information to be able to see what that was a picture of. Not giving all your data away, but the theory here is they might be able to get enough to get a judge to issue an order to, allow them to have more time maybe to break into things or look further into your business practice. I mean, it's just a hole, a vulnerability that nobody really thought of before. Now, most of the common encryption schemes are being updated to make sure that they automatically change the encryption key for each version you save. You know, if you save one on, you know, January 1st and then another one January 7th, they'll use two different encryption keys, which makes this method virtually useless because you need to use the same keys on both versions to make the comparison. But if you're using some older software, chances are you may be vulnerable. Now, I'm going to move across the pond over here. I've got a story. It comes off of smh.com.au, an Australian site, but it's referring back to what's going on in Britain. And a Britain primary school has decided to stop spelling tests. And, you know, and the reason I bring this up is because this is becoming more and more common. We're seeing more and more of this, and it just drives me absolutely crazy. The reason they're stopping the test is that they say that it is too distressing, too stressful for the children. And that making them memorize things doesn't really teach them anything. Excuse me, it does. It teaches them how to memorize stuff. Now, I am all for, I am a person that believes firmly that memorization just for the sake of memorization is not always necessary. If there's a piece of information you're going to use once every 6 months and you know how to look it up, there's no reason to memorize it. And Einstein actually purported to use this. He said, you know, somebody asked him a math question about a specific math formula. He says, I don't know what that formula is. I look it up in a book. Why would I waste my time memorizing something I could go look up very easily? And that holds true for information that you don't use continuously. There's no reason to memorize things that you use once every great while. I don't need to know the ratio of oil to gasoline to mix for my trimmer, because I only mix it once a season, and when I have to mix it, I just look on the side of the trimmer and it says right there on the label. There's no reason for me to make an effort to memorize that. But things like spelling are things you use every day. And take it from me, I am not a good speller, and it haunts me. Even with all the Firefox extensions and spell check that we have, I still wish that I was a better speller. I still wish that I had done better in school. You know, I did great in all of my classes, but spelling was just my nemesis. And I have a real problem with saying that students are having trouble memorizing. It's just not fair. And so, it's just too distressing. Let's not make them do it. You know, how low are we going to lower the bar? You know, there's a story a week ago where they said the lowest score you could get is 50%. So that if you answered 1 out of 10 questions right on a math test, you'd get a 50. Tell me that isn't going to confuse you, because I'll link up to the story. I know I'm rambling on. It drives me absolutely crazy when we start dumbing down the schools. And that's over in Britain. But I guarantee you that stuff's going to cross the pond, and we're going to be hearing about that right here in the good old US of A soon. And I know a lot of you listen in Britain, too. Now, our next story. I find it really amusing, although it is not a funny subject. Ars Technica has a story about how credit card processors are finally going to ban WEP. And when they say WEP, they're talking about wireless encryption protocol. WEP, that's the system of encrypting your Wi-Fi for your router at home. It's the one you used 10 years ago that we tell you don't use now because it can be cracked in about 2 minutes. Yeah, that WEP. If you're not familiar, basically it's a way, we talked about encryption a few stories ago, it's a way for your wireless router to communicate with your computer without broadcasting all the information your computer's sending and the router's sending out in the open. It makes it so you can't see it because it's encrypted. Unfortunately, WEP is severely flawed and is very easy to crack because it sends the keys right out there with it, and you can basically brute force attack it in like 2 or 3 minutes. Problem is, tens of hundreds of thousands of retail vendors use WEP every day when you swipe your credit card. There was a story I remember reading about 3 or 4 months ago where a bunch of people got arrested because they had stolen a bunch of credit card information by sitting outside of, I think one of the places they sat outside was a fast food restaurant, like a Boston Market. And just when somebody would swipe the credit card, it would go encrypted in WEP to their server. Well, they're sitting outside, they just decrypt it, and they got all this credit card information. Well, finally, credit card processors are going to ban WEP by the middle of 2010. Now, I don't want you freaking out. Story indicates that some of the places that were hit last year were TJ Maxx and Marshall's, and I swear there was a fast food place as well. I don't want you freaking out. You know, don't be afraid to use your card. Just check your statements. I just find it amazing that the people that are in charge of your credit card information can be so careless and so behind the technological times. Don't they have anyone in these companies that has the authority to make decisions that can say, hey, WEP is insecure. I don't use WEP on my router. Do you? If you do, you need to get an updated router. Instead of WEP, I think they use WAP now. So all these acronyms, but basically it's like, I'm going to encrypt my stuff by writing it backwards. Yeah, nobody will figure that out. You know, when the largest incident of consumer data theft in history occurs because of the cruddy way WEP encryption works, you'd think we could do something a little sooner than mid-2010. I'll link up to the story in the show notes. Tell me what you think. Geeknews@gmail.com. Now, this next story, boy, I tell you, it's probably gonna toast the crunchies of a couple of you. Off of the OrlandoSentinel.com, AT&T has made a little difference, a little change in the way it's doing its billing. And apparently it's allegedly, I've seen some stories about that this is due to a shortfall in revenue, that they're finding it a little harder to get the revenue that they used to get from short-term loans and things. The economy's not as good, so they're passing this on to the consumer. They've decided to start pre-billing, meaning that instead of paying for the service you just got, you're going to pay for the service you're about to get. It's kind of like going to a restaurant and paying for next week's meal. You know, pay for the meal you're going to eat today, and also, could you pay for the meal you're going to eat next week, too? Problem is, millions of AT&T customers are getting what people are terming double bills. They're getting bills with two similar charges, one for the month that they normally would get billed for and one for that future month. Now, it's only going to happen once. Once you're a month ahead, then you just keep paying your bill. The idea is, can you imagine if this happened not just with AT&T? What if your phone, your cable, your water bill, your electric bill? What if every bill you had suddenly decided to do this? Could you afford to double your payments 1 month? I know I couldn't. Of course, the real problem here, not only is the fact that you're getting double billed, but that you're getting billed for something you haven't and may never use. And you know, it's a lot easier for me to cancel my service and have you send me a bill for what I did use than for me to cancel my service and try to get you, a company that no longer has any interest in me because I'm no longer your customer, to send me my refund. No, it's not the end of the world, but man, it's annoying. There's also a very interesting story over on LiveScience.com by Meredith Small. She did a study on grief and how mammals specifically handle grief and why grief may be a necessary part of evolution, and that the act of feeling grief, you know, we have all lost someone. We've all been there, and if you haven't been there, goodness bless you, someday you will. You know, it happens. And it's not fun. But grief, that feeling, that terrible, deep sorrow that you feel, actually has some evolutionary advantages. And a couple of the advantages are, first of all, it makes you be more protective of those that you still have. It creates stronger bonds in the people that remain, the groups that remain. And it also may cause you to reach out to people you had otherwise not really been close to and help to form bonds that have never been there before. I'm not going to get real into this. I don't want to get depressing. It's a very interesting, and it's a fairly short article. It's not going to take you more than a few minutes to read it. Very interesting, though, how grief could have the evolutionary benefits that you never considered. It's not just the pain and the loss you feel. It's the social connections that causes. Now let's move on to a very good story. I mean, this is excellent news over on itmanagement.earthweb.com. Open source. You've heard about open source. We all know what open source is. Open source is, when you do something and you allow other people to use it as long as they let their stuff be open source. And it's part of what Creative Commons is based on. It's part of what the whole Ubuntu, Fedora, all that's based on. The idea that we're going to share what we learn and that if you use what I have, you're going to share what you learn, right? That's the whole idea behind open source. Real problem that you may not be aware of is there has never really been a court case that has gone all the way through where open source has been affirmed as a legal standing, that it is actually something that can be enforced. That's now changed, and open source has now had a ruling in its favor for the first time. You know, up until this point, all these had been settled out of court and things like that. But now, what happened? A gentleman named Bob Jacobson had a hobby doing model railroads, and he wrote some software called the Java Model Railroad Interface, allowing you to control model railroads. You know, the thing where you take your den and you put up plywood and make real model railroads, right? So it allows you to use a computer to help use the switches and the gates and, make the railroad be more realistic. And he did this all under the open source software licensing. He didn't want to make any money. He just wanted to share it and make sure that if you used it, you shared what you learned from it as well. Now, a gentleman by the name of Matthew Ketzer has a company that sells model train software, and he filed a bunch of patents. And because of a unique way in which the patent system works, he filed the patents in 2002 after Bob Jacobson had released his software, but said that he had been working on the software before that back in 1998. In other words, he filed the patent after Bob's software had been made, but said, oh no, but I've been working on it for 4 years. And he didn't disclose that this other software existed. Well, turns out that his software had a piece of Bob Jacobson's software in it, and according to the licensing agreement from the open source agreement, if you use a piece of code from someone's open source software, you cannot sue them. That's part of the licensing agreement. And so when he tried to bring suit to stop Bob Jacobson from selling his software for free, they're giving it away for free, it has now been ruled, and I know this is kind of complicated, but basically it's been ruled, hey, you use some of this other guy's software, he's open source. The open source licensing agreement says that if you use that software in your software, you cannot sue. Boop. Been ruled in the favor of open source. And so now open source is basically official. First time this has ever happened. And it's great news because it's the first real legal test open source has ever had. You know, and I think it's important because, closed source, it can stifle things. They lock things down and then no one else can ever use it. You can only record if you're a TiVo, that kind of thing. Open source, you have a great idea. I look at it. I improve upon it. Two or three people have a better idea. They improve upon it. And the next thing you know, what you have is much better than you could have ever even thought of. Doesn't make a great business model for making money, but it makes for a great sense of innovation. So I'll link up. This is a pretty lengthy story. I'll link up to it in the show notes. Go check it out. over on the podcast tab over at geeknewscentral.com. I remember we were talking about the RIAA earlier, and I told you we had another story coming up. Well, a real short shout out, Weird Al, and you know, wouldn't you know it? It is just absolutely phenomenal that the day that I guest host here on the Geek News Central podcast is the day that Weird Al releases his first ever single without an album, and that's October 7th. Weird Al is releasing his songs as he finishes them, and today is the day he is scheduled to release his first song. And what it means is he's not just releasing a single. This is a song he's going to have, that, and he says that this song is a parody of a song that's currently still one of the top songs on the charts. He's never had that happen before, and he's not waiting until he has a whole album. He's going to try releasing singles as they come out, as he gets them done. He can be more topical that way. Now, go figure, this happens on the day when I'm guest hosting the show, because I'm a big Weird Al fan. I always have been since the early 80s. So that gives me, what, plus 500 geek points, something like that, right? So anyway, you got to go check. This is off of Slashdot, and I'm just amazed at the changes that the music industry is going for. And good on you, Weird Al. Now, there's a quick story I want to touch on over at GigaOhm. And it's one of these, well, you don't say, we all knew this already kind of story. Survey says cable sucks. And what they did is they surveyed people and found out that more people use cable than other options for their broadband, primarily because cable has such a monopoly in so many places. But so many people absolutely loathe the idea. So many people hate their cable companies, but still use their services. And I think this is very telling. The reason I link up to this story is because it's very telling on the problem we have. You know, you've heard Todd. You've listened to the show for a while, haven't you? You've heard Todd lamenting his lack of choices in Hawaii. He just does not have a lot of choices when it comes to broadband. I'm in a major metropolitan area here in Florida, and I can tell you, I've got two. I've got Verizon, and I've got, it used to be Time Warner, but now I think it's Bright House. Now, I'm sure I could probably, there's probably a bunch of those little subsidiary ISDNs or whatever the case may be. But, you know, generally, it's cable or fiber if you want any kind of speed. I am in the minority. I have a choice. Most people don't, and those that have cable really don't like it. I will tell you right now, I'm on cable. I keep looking at getting the Fios. The only reason I really haven't is because of the time commitment involved in getting them out here, getting it done, the hassle of changing over emails and everything. It's getting to the point where I'm going to have to do it, though, because my cable service is actually amazingly solid. And that's probably one of the other reasons I haven't done, is because Fios, in my area, I have a couple friends that have it, and it's, you know, hit or miss. It's not down all the time, but it's down a lot more than my cable is. I've been on this. I've had cable since it was available in my area. I was like, you know, like the 50th person to get it. And man, when I first got it, it was quick for the time. Now, when I first got it, it also was down constantly. I used to make a joke. Imagine all the great service and high quality support you get from your cable company, and combine that with someone who has no idea how to run an ISP, because that's exactly what it was like. It was honestly like watching four people that had no idea what they were doing try to juggle chainsaws. It was messy, it was ugly, and I just wanted to turn my gaze away and wish I wasn't involved in it. But for the past 5 years, I have got to tell you, the service I have has been outstanding. And when I say service, I don't call their support very often. The only time I call their support, I've called their support probably twice in the past 2 years, is if it goes out and it's out for more than an hour or so, I'll call them and say, you do know there's a problem, right? And they always go, oh yeah, we're having a problem. It has not been down for more than, you know, 2 minutes, more than two or three times in the past 2 years. And those times it was only down for three or 4 hours tops. I mean, it has been amazingly reliable. Unfortunately, it hasn't been amazingly fast. I am, my upload speed is 256, and that is just, it's painful when you're uploading a podcast. So, yeah, I'll probably go to Fios, but I am going to have to say that while I do agree, when I had cable for my TV, I thought it sucked. I kind of like my cable broadband, and I'll probably keep them for 3 or 4 months when I first change over to Fios, just to make sure that Fios doesn't suck. How did I end up doing a commercial for cable? What just must be some kind of, temporal causality thing going on here, huh? Also, very fascinating story here over on the science section of Fox News. Earth may exist in a giant cosmic bubble. Now, what we're talking about here is the Earth. You know, one of the things that scientists have been struggling with is when they look far out into the universe, it looks like things are older than they should be. They're moving farther away from us faster than they should be. And it just, things don't add up. You know, they look at the age of the universe and they say the universe is, and I don't have the figures in front of me, but let's say they say the universe is 15 billion years old. But then they find a star that's 16 billion years old. And you're like, something isn't adding up here. And so what's going on? Well, the universe must be older than we thought it was. But if you do the figures, the universe can't be older than that. You know, and this has been a real quandary, a real problem. Turns out, some new research indicates that perhaps the problem is the readings, that our area of the universe, the area where the Milky Way galaxy is, may be a sort of cosmic bubble that has less of this quote-unquote dark matter than the rest of the universe. And then that is impacting the readings on not only the brightness of things that are farther away, but also our readings on how fast they're moving. And so maybe the universe, the age that we think it is more accurate, or maybe the speeds are less accurate, but in either case, this is why we're getting this discrepancy, is because we live in a cosmic bubble, and despite what scientists have been saying for years, maybe our place in the universe is unique. As unique as a group of galaxies with, you know, 2 gazillion stars in it can be. You know, keep in mind, we're not just talking about our place in the universe, like Earth, like just our solar system. We're talking about our galaxies, our set of galaxies in our local neighborhood of, you know, a few thousand light years. Isn't it fascinating that, you think everybody when you're growing up, you think that your version of science is it, and that all the people before you just didn't have a clue, and then you come to find out, maybe you're just like they are. Maybe you had a lot of good information that was right, but some information that you just based your every belief on that just wasn't quite what you thought it was. Also, a related story here, Orion versus Apollo. And when we're saying Orion is the name we're using for the new manned mission to the moon. And it's comparing the spacecraft from back in the 60s to the spacecraft we plan on using to go back to the moon. And it's amazing the similarities. You know, it's basically, things are going to look pretty similar, but looks are just about all that they're going to share. Because, of course, the technology is just far more advanced. The crew's going to have a lot more room to move around, and they're going to have a lot more viability about choosing where they're actually going to land. Of course, the new Orion mission is planning on launching in stages, you know, putting parts up in orbit, then launching the astronauts, joining the parts together, and shooting off to the moon. They also plan on landing in the same spot a couple times and perhaps make the startings of a permanent moon base. It's a really interesting read. Be sure you go check it out. And of course, we can't let you go without talking about the astronomy picture of the day. Now, this picture is back from October 5th. And it's a real interesting one. This is a picture. I've seen this kind of thing before. It's actually a composite picture of the Earth at night. And what they did is they took pictures of the Earth, you know, right in the middle of the night and composited it all together. So you get as if the entire planet was in darkness. And you get to see how much of the planet we have lit up. And it is absolutely fascinating to see man's footprint on the planet. There's no doubt that if E.T. came flying by the dark side of the planet, you know, someone was down there, because we just, it's amazing. People, of course, habitate a lot around the coasts, and you can actually see what looks like networks and roadways as people, you know, conglomerate along rivers and other paths of least resistance. I've already got this one up as the background for my desktop. Now, this is the point of the show where normally we'd be talking about your voicemails and your email comments. You know, we do appreciate your feedback at the Geek News Central. But Todd was having a little problem. I'm not sure if it was a technical issue with a server or if it was just that good old hotel Wi-Fi. You know how that can be. We've talked about hotel Wi-Fi before. sometimes you pay and it says high-speed internet access, and their definition of high-speed and your definition of high-speed, two different things. But please do continue to send us your feedback and your suggestions to geeknews@gmail.com or call that voicemail hotline at 619-342-7365. Again, my name's Mike James. I really appreciate the opportunity to be your guest host. I appreciate you listening to the show. The next show will be on Friday. Until next time, I hope each and every one of you has a good one. And as Todd would say, aloha.